It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Good morning. Happy fall. September 2nd. I know, Sal, did you tweet it out? I didn't see your tweet. Did you say it? Did you do your rabbit to start fall?
Yeah.
And do you do it differently when it's a bigger month change? I consider September a seasonal month change as well, you know? So it's a big one, September 1st, and here we are September 2nd. So good morning.
Good morning. No, yes, I did. I did it yesterday because it was September 1st, and thankfully Yana texted it to me. She had left early to go work out, and I was actually still sleeping, and she texted me the two rabbit emojis. I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta say it, and then I gotta tweet it out. So I usually say it first thing in the morning, rabbit for good luck. It's what happens the first day of the month. It's an old type of tale that I learned years ago, so I try to do it, and then I tweet it out. And then what's happened over the years, Jeremy, it's very interesting. Because of my role and what I do for a living, I tweet out two rabbit emojis, and suddenly people think I'm tweeting about the Bills signing somebody, and it's DeAndre Hopkins.
Right,
or
sure.
So, Hopkins. You know what I mean? And I'm like, no. So then I've added the calendar emoji to it to kind of like temper that a little bit, but I still have to explain it to people sometimes. So it's kind of taken on a bit of a life.
I'm now trying to think of all the greatest rabbit-based names. Hopkins is good, or like,
yes.
Was there somebody named Hare? Harrison.
Oh,
Harrison. Harrison Phillips is coming back. I gotcha. Or, anyway, that's funny. That's great.
Doesn't Max Harrison, isn't he going to need a nickname that's something rabbit related, considering he's like the fastest player on the team?
And he jumps routes and all that.
It's hair.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like
not
that.
Bad.
We're going to need to workshop that.
I like that. Hopefully get him on the field as soon as possible. He's going to miss, obviously, four games coming up here. That's the minimum. And hopefully he'll be ready to rock and roll after that. And, obviously this week we're going to be checking out, what's happening at that position around him, guys, because there's a lot of intrigue and wonderment about Tre'Davious White still. It's interesting. Yesterday you're talking to Jeremy about first of the month and rabbit. And then one of the other things that happened yesterday was lots of teams had practice with media availability. Lots of teams didn't. The Bills were in the boat that didn't. So even though I'm sure the players were, doing things yesterday, there was no media. We have no idea if Tre'Davious White was doing anything, team-wise, practice-wise, and we won't know any of that until tomorrow. Whereas, as you mentioned, Joe, at Baltimore, they saw no Isaiah Likely, no Jair Alexander, no Patrick Ricard, by the way, which is interesting, we can talk about. But, I know Miami, Marcel Louis-Jacques was there, New England, but there were a lot of teams that didn't have practice, so we wait another day to find that out.
Yeah. So, Sal, we'll get the injury designations tomorrow, but let's talk about, we already know one thing happened over the weekend, a bit of a surprise, kind of out of nowhere, and I imagine it would happen for the player, too. Dwayne Carter's Achilles injury that takes him out for the season.
Yeah, it's a real shame for him, obviously. Young player going into his second year who is going to be a part of the defensive rotation. And look, a week or so ago, a lot of people were wondering, what his role was on this team. Could they even be looking to, move him and trade him? Never to me was it a question if he would, make the 53. They weren't going to move off a third round pick, after 1 year, especially with the suspension to Larry Ogunjobi. But you do wonder, with Daquan Jones and Ed Oliver as starters, TJ Sanders and Deion Walker, the rookies looking so good, what was Dwayne Carter's role? My answer would be his role would be what it was last year, as a rotational piece. There's going to be pretty much five guys. One guy won't get a jersey on game day oftentimes, but he's an important depth piece. But really for him, more than anything, his development, this is going to be really, really tough for him, obviously, to miss an entire year before coming back next year. In the meantime, because they do have Larry Ogunjobi suspended, you're down to four defensive tackles on the active roster. Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, TJ Sanders, Deion Walker. Question is now, guys, do they activate, or should say sign someone from the practice squad? I'm anticipating that Dwayne Carter is going to go on IR this week at some point, maybe today, tomorrow, end of the week, whatever. At that point, they'll have an extra roster spot open. Will they sign Jordan Phillips? Will they sign Zion Logue? I think both those guys are clear candidates to join the 53. Maybe Logue right now more than Phillips. We'll see. Or do they sign somebody at a different position? And then you use your elevations for those guys, because you could kind of do that for a few weeks here until you get to Larry Ogunjobi coming back. I think, you can look at it a few different ways here.
Yeah.
Would Phillips strike you as the right type of defensive tackle to fit Carter. I guess, Sal, what did you think the Bills wanted from Carter this year? I know there had been some talk. Bean had even spoke about, right, like maybe some one technique for him this year versus three technique. But I feel like when he was drafted, the idea of him was more of a penetrator, maybe a little smaller, but somebody that you would think would be more of a guy that would get after the quarterback.
Yeah, that's really more what it is, Joe. I think he's more of a three tech who could play a little bit of one tech. And that was, I think once they saw that TJ Sanders, you know, could also fit that role, and then they saw Deion Walker, what he could do, and we all saw Deion Walker flash, right? I mean, I think that that is, you know, what they envisioned him to be, more of that Ed Oliver kind of backup, but a guy that can slide over if you need him to. You know, I wonder, you know, if it's a game-by-game basis, you asked about Jordan Phillips. Jordan Phillips is a veteran. He's seen everything in this league. Is that the kind of player that you'd be real comfortable with, you know, having on the roster this week against the Baltimore Ravens and Derrick Henry? Zion Logue's a big man. You know, if that's somebody you want to add as well to the mix. You could also just roll into the game with four defensive tackles. They quite often do that, to be honest with you. So I wonder if this is a game-by-game basis or if this is something more long-term, if they decide to bring somebody up to the 53-man roster. It'll be interesting to see how they play it. Yes, Joe, I think Jordan Phillips would kind of fit that role, but you know, we'll see how they want to play it. I think the key here is what they've seen from TJ Sanders and Deion Walker through preseason and camp. I think that's more than anything kind of what matters on how these guys fit and what their roles are over the next several weeks, at least until Ogunjobi comes back.
So we had a call in the first hour asking about this game with Baltimore. Here we are in a game week, and you know, we're talking about what's going on the offensive line. You opened up talking about Tre'Davious White. We don't really know his status yet. The safety room has been a lot of conversation, obviously, throughout camp and the preseason. What should the expectation be in terms of, maybe this is kind of a question for McDermott this week, right? Like, your defense coming together. You have a lot of new pieces, and you have, I don't know, almost half of a defense out with Hairston as well. So it's a big test, and I feel like it'll go a long way to show, I don't know, what McDermott and Bobby Babbage can kind of put together, come up with, given how much they're already going through to start the season.
No doubt. I think it's a challenge. I mean, right away, you look at the game. You could make an argument. I mean, I'm sure there could be a debate here. You could make an argument that this is the toughest game in the regular season the team will play all year. Now, of course, the Eagles won the Super Bowl. They come to Buffalo. That's late. That's December when both teams might be in a different spot. So, I mean, I get that. Of course, the Chiefs, right? But certainly it's right up there. And you come right out of the chute, and you got to play, A, maybe the toughest team on your schedule or toughest game. That's part of it. B, a team that they just, their last game here, the Baltimore Ravens, they just lost to end their season. You think they don't want to come here and atone for that? Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think very clearly to what happened when the Bills beat the Colts in the playoffs, and the next year was the Jonathan Taylor game, right? And they were like, yeah, we want to go over there and show them, like, we thought we should have won that playoff game, and we want to show we were the better team. Like, I think about things like that. That stuff is real, right? These guys, they know. Like, they came here, and they want to prove a point this year coming to this game. And then there's the injuries on top of it, Jeremy, which you mentioned, which is something they've been dealing with. Now, look, there's always the upside of it allowed guys to really get more opportunity. It allowed them to use some of their depth to see what they had in some of these rookies. And I think they were able to see who fits, who doesn't. And getting Deion Walker and TJ Sanders involved, getting Dorian Strong involved, right? I think those are real, real benefits for this team. But they also didn't have Cole Bishop for quite a while. And finally, the last couple of weeks, he's been on the field a little bit more, right? So, yeah, I that's just an example there. They're going to have to – what do they do? How do they manage Joey Bosa throughout the year? Want to make sure it is a marathon, not a sprint. He's been healthy, but you want to make sure you stay healthy when it comes to that. It is a test. There's no doubt for Sean McDermott, for Bobby Babbage. But, look, the NFL, they'll tell you. They'll be the first to tell you. No one feels sorry for you in this league, right? You go out there and you have to perform, period. It doesn't matter who's on the field.
Sal, we mentioned the Baltimore injuries going into the week as they did practice yesterday and had that open. So of the three guys that we just mentioned, likely Jaire Alexander and Pat Ricard, how important do you see each of those injuries? I mean, they're all starters. Likely maybe is their second best pass catcher. Alexander's the one where I feel like we talked about him when there was a rumor about the Bills acquiring him. He's got injury problems throughout his career, so it might maybe isn't even that stunning that he wouldn't be available for them right away.
Yeah, I mean, when he signed, I remember the day he signed, and we were all like, oh, all right, Ravens, there they go, loading up. Well, that was a risky signing, obviously, and everybody kind of knew he had some injuries. Apparently, from what I've read, he already had his knee drained, like, right after he got there, and, like, that's been an issue for him, a knee injury, and that's kind of what held him back in Green Bay. And now he has not practiced guys since August 4th, I think it is. Maybe August 1st, somewhere in there. Like, it's been quite a while for him. I mean, it would be, to me, a long shot for him to be able to play this week, even if he's able to practice, right? But who knows? We'll see. Important-wise, I don't know if I'd put him up there as important because it's somebody they really didn't have, you know, and they've been practicing without him anyway. Same thing with Isaiah Likely. But for him, the difference is, boy, he just changes the dynamic of their offense. They love to run two tight ends, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely. They like to go big on you. These guys are really good tight ends. They're the new age tight ends who can block, who can catch. Isaiah Likely's the guy last year in the opener against the Chiefs who just missed getting the full foot inbounds to beat the Chiefs in that game to open up Thursday Night Football. He's a really, really big piece. So I say he is the most important, but... boy, Patrick Ricard, that's an interesting one that didn't really percolate until recently when you kind of noticed that he was missing practice. If you follow like what's going on in Baltimore, really, it's been a couple weeks now for him, too. He has not practiced in a little while. And he's dealing with, okay, you know how like we have the thing here with Tre'Davious White, it's a lower leg, right? It's a leg injury, right? Nobody's really saying what specifically it is because you don't have to yet. For Patrick Ricard, it's soft tissue injury. Nobody knows what it is. It's a soft tissue injury. I mean, I haven't seen it. Maybe there's something out there specifically. And I don't know what that is, and I don't know what that means for him. But to me, Patrick Ricard is a really big piece for them, especially in this matchup, because the Bills are a lighter defense intentionally. The Bills play lighter to be more athletic, and we saw what can happen sometimes when the Bills play bigger teams. Why? That's a big reason the Bills went and got bigger this offseason. They're a little bit more lighter than most teams. They like to be athletic, and they have to be a little stronger at the point of attack. Patrick Ricard is a big piece of what the Ravens like to do against the Bills.
Last time these two teams played, you know, Sal, you wonder how much this will be a factor. And I'm looking at Derrick Henry's game log, not only against the Bills, but the month coming into that game. I just want to give you these numbers. It's kind of funny. Like 162, 147, 138, 186. Those were the four games before he played the Bills. Then against the Bills, it's 16 for 84 yards. And I wonder if John Harbaugh had an offseason hearing about how they didn't give the ball to Henry enough in that game. He ran 16 for 84, 5.3, and a touchdown. Like, he had a fine game, but, you know, whether it's not enough touches because of game script, whatever, I wonder how much the Bills' run defense will be tested and how much Baltimore will want to make them prove it, especially with the youth they've got in the middle of their line now.
No doubt. I think that'll be a big part of their game plan. Why not? You have Derrick Henry. He's fresh. He just signs... you know, was it the offseason? This offseason got the contract extension, right? I think it was. You know, it's the first game of the year, fresh legs. You know that this is a team that you've had some success running on them before. Remember the first play of the game and Sunday Night Football? But there's been times where they've stopped them. I went back and watched divisional round, the playoff game. And one thing that just was apparent from the get-go, the Bills came into that game saying, we are not letting Derrick Henry beat us. We're just not letting it happen. And the Bills just from the jump, if you go watch that first series, second series, every time Derrick Henry touched the ball, he had to start going laterally. He could not get his feet going downhill. And that's the key with him. You have to make him go side to side. Once you get him to turn a little bit, you know, it's different than tackling him straight on when he's Derrick Henry, you know, plowing through holes going, you know, 65 miles an hour. And the Bills just said, we are not going to let that happen. And then the Ravens, because of that, you saw some big plays. Bateman down the field, right? There was the Henry drop. Remember that Henry drop? That was a big one early in the game down the sidelines because the Bills were so focused on stopping the run. And I think the Bills have to kind of play that way to force the Ravens to change and alter their game plan a little bit. Maybe John Harbaugh has been hearing, oh, you didn't give it to Derrick Henry enough. But I got to be honest, it wasn't working until the second half. Then they did, and then it was working. The Ravens did a good job on the Bills in the second half running the football, and a lot of that was Derrick Henry, and they started handing him the ball. But early in the game, I think the Bills just forced the Ravens to kind of have to do a couple things differently than they wanted to do because they weren't having success. The one thing I thought the Ravens did not do that I think that they should have done more, they never had Lamar pull it and run in that game. Right? Yeah. Like Lamar handed the ball and there was never a threat of him to run. He had runs, but they're all on scrambles. Like there was no design Lamar runs in that game, really, from what I remember. Very few.
I feel like I remember the number two for that. There were only two in that game for him, which it's six carries, so maybe that adds up. 6 for 39 in that game, Sal. And receiving wise, like I wonder, like, how much, if you watch a lot of that game back, do you feel like they missed Zay Flowers in that game? Because he'll be available this week. Because it's not like the Ravens didn't get their chunks when they did throw the ball. But he is their most accomplished receiver. Well, maybe not,
no doubt.
Not accomplished. Maybe he's their best because DeAndre Hopkins is there now.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big part of their offense, no doubt. And he's an outlet for Lamar, but he's also a guy that can, you know, get down the field. And he's a guy that I think has had a really good start to his NFL career. He was missed very badly, I think, in that game against the Bills. And they're going to rely on him in this game. So, you know, we'll see. Yes, they do have DeAndre Hopkins now, Tylan Wallace, Anthony Miller. They don't have all these great names, you know, on the back end of their depth chart, guys that can kind of fill some roles and do different things. And we know DeAndre Hopkins has had a great, you know, career in the NFL. What is he right now at this stage, at his age? But I think Bateman and Flowers are tough to deal with. And, you know, you got to remember, you know, the Bills also in the first game they played, they were without Taron Johnson and Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard, all right. Three of those guys, right? Then they go into the game and they were healthier, and that helped the Bills, obviously. So I think both ways can be looked at here. Both these teams had some injuries to deal with when they played each other last year in the two games.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, we know you got to run. We'll talk tomorrow and get game injury designations as we roll through this game week. Happy season. We'll talk soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. One thing I had just top of mind, what was I going to mention to you, Joe? It was about Josh Allen. Shocker, right? All right. Talk about something else. Give me a minute.
Josh Allen, by the way, who was six. Still amazing that he was 127 yards, no touchdowns in that game.
Yeah.
No passing touchdowns. He did have two rushing touchdowns in that game. 10 for 20, though, rushing. Like, 10 for 20 rushing, 16 for 22, 127, and they won the football game.
Yeah. Turnovers. Big mistakes from Baltimore. And a drop at the end zone by Mark Andrews. No, what I was going to say was, let's get stupid. Ready? I got a let's get stupid for you. Let's get stupid. Joe Brady calls that pass out throwback to Allen play, the trick play. Baltimore will never see it coming.
That is
like, listen, guys.
If
there's one thing the Bills are not going to do today, they're not going to run a throwback to Allen,
right?
Where he then throws it. They'll never do that.
He lined up at receiver. Who took the snap?
I don't know.
Curtis Samuel took the snap.
I blacked out.
I gotta watch that.
I just know that it happened. They were in that game.
Yeah, they were. Oh man, they were coming back a little bit.
Was it 24-10?
Let me find it. They were not
totally dead yet.
No, and they were driving. I think they were driving.
Yes, they were like midfield.
Midfield when it happened. Also, man, he got. Is that the biggest hit he's taken? Like
he got lit up
as a Bill.
Yeah, he got lit up in Houston. The week before or the week after?
That was the concussion controversy, whatever. The Bills. Okay, so coming into the second half, they're down 21-3, right? 21-3. They force back-to-back three and outs by the Ravens. The Bills score a touchdown, four plays, 60 yards. Couldn't have started better, right? You threw two three and outs and you scored quick. And it's 21-10. You're driving. There's still 7 minutes left in the third quarter. And yeah, here it is. Direct snap to Curtis Samuel. Josh Allen sacked -7, fumbles, recovered by Kyle Hamilton. And that's basically your football game.
What was the score at the time?
21-10.
All right, you know.
You're driving halfway through the third quarter. You make it a 4-point game. And
it's a game.
We're talking. But the trick play just
equally
blows up.
Stupid, possibly. I started to do something. You tell me if this is stupid or not. Whenever there's a crazy college football play, I tweet it and tag Joe Brady. Is that dumb? Did you see the play? Somebody over the weekend ran a tush-push long snap pass.
Okay.
Where it's like the tush-push formation, and instead of snapping it to the quarterback, they snap it through the quarterback's legs, long snapped back to the running back. The quarterback pretends to fall into the pile, tush-push style, while a tight end leaks out for a really big gain.
Okay.
Fake tush-push. A play-action tush-push, if you will. But it was snapped between the legs of the quarterback.
See, part
is it stupid to tag the Bills offensive coordinator with crazy plays, or is it something where he's watching these games and thinking like, I like that, well, I like that. LSU ran an orbit motion handoff to the receiver and pulled a guard. It was a really elaborate run play. I could totally see the Bills using this year.
Well, in this one instance, this was a what was it, a long snapper trick play?
No, it was just the picture Josh Allen lines
up. Okay, I'm watching it now. Yeah.
They snap it through the legs of the quarterback?
That's what I'm asking. Is this a special teams play? No, this is a like the offense.
This is a tush push. Yeah, a tush push.
I see. Okay.
Fake.
This is awesome.
Right? Come on.
They should run this.
It's not bad.
They should just have it. Have it. Save it.
Kansas City.
Just file it away. Put it in an envelope somewhere. Put it away.
Right.
Break it out in January.
Fourth and one. There's 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
They have the lead. Man. They're trying to protect it. And instead of going for the first down, they go for the kill shot.
They would never. no coach would have the stones to run that play.
Fourth and one.
And like imagine AFC Championship. It's fourth and one. And like, what would McDermott do? Or would he even know? Like, wait, what is that you just called?
Yeah.
It's fourth and one. You're down three to the Chiefs. There's a minute left. You're going for it. You're trying to win the game.
Love it.
And you hear Joe Brady call this play. Do you get on the mic if you're the head coach?
My guess is, sir, you
are not doing this right. I am fired tomorrow if this goes horribly wrong.
You hear Joe Brady call this play. What you mean is you hear a play call and you say, what's that? What's that?
Right.
McDermott's on the horn like, what play?
What play is
I've
that?
I've never heard of this before. What are we going to do? Oh, yeah, we're going to snap
Brady,
it.
Don't worry about
it. We're going to snap it through the legs of the quarterback to, yeah.
And James Cook's going to throw a pass.
Well, funny thing about that, I was watching recently, it might have been Edelman talking once, that in the Super Bowl against the Eagles maybe, there's a play where, does he throw a touchdown?
I don't think it's in the Super Bowl.
Okay, it's just a game against the Eagles.
Yeah.
He's telling a story where they're practicing during the week. And there's supposed to be a pitch out to him, and he throws back to the running back in a running back screen. So it's a throw out to the right. He's supposed to turn back left to the running back on a screen. He gets the throw. It's kind of blown up, and he sees a guy downfield and wings it and throws a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Something that Edelman, had talked about with the receiver who's running the clear out. Like, hey, by the way, just turn your head just in case. Like, you never know. And Edelman throws the touchdown pass, they score.
Yeah.
And then Edelman goes back to the sidelines, and Josh McDaniels says, like, you're dangerous, Maverick, like, freaks out on him about, like, I can't believe you actually pulled that off.
But I think part of it was he had mentioned that to the coaches during the practice week, and they told him,
don't do it.
Do not do that.
Do not do that.
Do not go to, you don't have a second read. Do not read the defense and then go back across the field. They said, do not make that throw. It's like, if it's not there, just run. And he decided anyway to throw it. Which is crazy.
You can't get the greatness unless you go off script a little bit.
Yeah.
It's Josh Allen's whole career. Anyway, just saying. He did catch a touchdown pass that he threw kind of against the Niners. Like, that happened.
That Ravens play, we've mentioned this before. It is the only trick play they've run since Brian Daboll, I believe.
And probably the last one.
And Daboll used to run a lot of them. Like, Cole Beasley's thrown touchdown passes. Allen has caught touchdown passes. Some that didn't work. Remember the fake QB sneak throwback against Pittsburgh to the running back that didn't work? This coordinator has not done that at all. And neither did Ken Dorsey.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe, happy football season. Injury designations to come tomorrow from Bills practice. And, yeah, it's Baltimore week. We're 2 days away from the start of the NFL season with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Still Mike Parsons, trade fallout, all that good stuff. Give us a ring. Wide open phone lines for you, too, here on WGR.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all felt a little disrespected maybe coming in by there was a lot of conversation and none of it was about us. And so, you know, I think we all were highly motivated. Our players were certainly excited to play. Thought we did a great job of, North Carolina came out and executed really well in the first drive. We got down early and it didn't look great for us. Our guys just hung in there and, you know, we really prepared well. Really proud of our guys and they put a lot of work in and we showed up today.
Head coach of TCU. They dominate Belichick and the UNC Tar Heels. Jeremy and Joe, happy football season. What else did we see over the weekend? You saw Miami Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You saw plenty of Ohio State Texas. I watched a lot of that.
You have the Arch Manning debut, the Clemson LSU game that night, which was a top 10 matchup. Syracuse got bodied a little bit.
They did. They did. Yeah. Neutral site.
Tennessee, I mean.
It's right. Tennessee in a neutral
You're
site.
You're at an game. SEC opponent on the neutral site.
But it was, really like, it was in Atlanta. Like, right. Yeah. Is that a neutral site? Come on. We'll be back. Stronger than ever, of course. Probably not. Who knows?
Arch Manning, I can't imagine, I haven't looked, is the Heisman favorite this morning. Right?
Yeah. Josh Allen ranked the number 3 player in the NFL, the highest ranking he's ever had. Up from, he was outside the top 10 last year. So yeah. Ranked number 3 overall behind Saquon Barkley at 1, Lamar Jackson at 2.
Barkley being the best player in the league. It's what that list does, though, right? Like, it's not really factoring in as much positional value and
right.
and whatnot.
It's just,
and
it's players saying who's the best. And isn't it also possible? I don't know if they've ever really told us the formula for how it works. Write down 3 of these players and 3 at this position and 3 and whoever
yeah.
has the. Like Barkley would be. Is it like a Heisman or an MVP vote where? If I'm ranking quarterbacks, I might be more likely to split 1 and 2 and 1 and 2 on a given mm-hmm. year. And if I'm ranking the running backs last year, well, Barkley had the best year. Henry would have been the second
right.
best. So
right.
I don't know how it works. I don't think you should get too bent out of shape about these rankings, anything like that. I do want to make the point about Barkley, though, because here we have a great player joined a great team. And you know, Joe, we would talk about the MVP race every single week, and
yeah.
part of it that bothered me, it always bothers me, that the MVP has become, now that Josh has his, maybe we can kind of put this to bed, but probably not. The MVP has become, well, who has bad teammates?
Mm-hmm.
It turned into that. Derrick Henry can't win it because he's got Lamar. Lamar can't win it because he's got Derrick Henry. Well, it can't be Saquon Barkley. He is the best line in football.
They can't be too bad, though, because they also have to be good enough to get you to the playoffs.
Correct.
As Joe Burrow found
Joe
out.
Burrow can't make it, but if he did yeah. make the playoffs, well, he has Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
And we kind of watched as Allen's MVP campaign became a little bit about nobody else on the team is all that good, and we know that they have a good team and they have a good roster, but they don't have as many stars, right? And this NFL Top 100 is proof of that. It's Allen, Dawkins, and Cook, and that's it.
Yeah.
Benford should probably be on there. We all know that. But
it is how he won. I mean, we heard voters, Dan Orlovsky.
It is how he won.
Dan Orlovsky is an MVP vote, and I remember him going on TV the next day and basically laying out, like, this is why I voted for Allen. Lamar has 9 Pro Bowlers around him. He's got Derrick Henry around him. I'm voting for Josh.
Right.
Because the idea is that it depends on how deep you go into it. Orlovsky and 27 others that voted for Allen in first place probably thought, like, yeah, his teammates aren't as good as Lamar Jackson's. I remember Mina Kimes laying out the reason she didn't vote for Allen was because she thought he had the best offensive line in football.
Right.
Like, I'm not doing the teammate thing. I'm just looking at that because I think Allen's got an offensive line that nobody's talking about. So, but that is, isn't that it? That's the analysis now. It's part of, though, how close they are. If there was a gulf in statistics, or I guess there was a gulf in statistics. If there was a gulf in your reputation of the two and one had better teammates, you might give it to the better guy anyway. But in this case, I just feel like Jackson and Allen are so close that this was probably more than ever that you did the teammate thing. And it's just because you're searching for anything that shows one's value being better than the other.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's just going to feel like a tie. So I wonder how much of that is the MVP award and how much of it is these two. These two are neck and neck at the top, and good luck trying to differentiate between them.
Well, Barkley to the Eagles, there's probably a point to be made in here. I'm trying to find out where they ranked in rushing offense the year before he got there. Okay, I've got it. So
with, Kenneth Gainwell and...
With DeAndre Swift.
DeAndre Swift, right.
Right.
Yep.
They were a top 10 rushing offense the year before.
Okay.
They ran for 2,000 yards. Their yards per carry, not that good. Like, Barkley, this is something, whether we're talking about getting the Bills another receiver or why James Cook matters to me, why I wanted the Bills to bring back James Cook. Did the Eagles have Did they massively upgrade their line last year versus the year before?
No. They actually lost Jason Kelce.
Okay. Kelce didn't play last year. Right.
Right.
So they didn't really upgrade by any measure. What they did was they get a player in there that helps showcase that their offensive line is better than DeAndre Swift can show it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So the Eagles go from running for 2,100 yards, 2,190 the year before. And then last year, Barkley goes for 2,000 himself. And they maybe give him more carries. He had 345 carries. But nearly 6 yards a carry, 13 touchdowns. The school of thought for the Eagles was, we're good. We run the ball relatively well. Let's get somebody that makes it even better. And what happened? They win the Super Bowl. He becomes an MVP candidate. He gets 2,000 yards. He's named the NFL's best player. So there's, to me, the point is, let's be careful about the MVP conversation and what the ultimate goal actually is. Not that anyone really has this confused, but it felt like the MVP conversation kind of lost sight of what is important. What you want is, what I want for the Bills, is to win the Super Bowl. And if they win the Super Bowl with three top 100 players or nine, nobody cares. But I think their chances to win it are better if they have nine top 100 players like the Eagles do. So hopefully this offseason, they found a couple. Maybe it's Deion Walker who finds his way on that list, or Joey Bosa makes an appearance because he has a really good season, or who else? Keon Coleman has the kind of breakout where he's ranked the 74th best player next year. Like, I would look at all those as big-time wins for them, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to win the games, and when you win the games, it's kind of like, you know, whatever, chicken or the egg. Do you have nine top 100 players because you won the Super Bowl, or did you win the Super Bowl because you have nine top 100 players, you know?
Right.
But finding more support. The Eagles, to me, are obviously a success story of, we were good. What if we decided to go for the best at it? The best at it, a given thing, and that's running the football. And Baltimore did the same thing, right? Baltimore is a really good run team before Derrick Henry showed up, and they showed up and said, what if we added an absolute freak show at the position to make it even more dangerous?
Yep.
So, congrats to Saquon Barkley for being number one.
Is that also like the declaration that we're sure now, like, a non-quarterback will never win it again?
MVP?
Barkley had 2,000 yards last year and didn't get, you know how many votes he had for MVP? Zero. First place votes. He had zero first place votes. In fact,
is it because his team's too good?
I just looked back to, 2022 is when they changed the way you vote on awards for the MVP. Like,
where it used to be just vote for a player.
I think that's right.
And there was no first or second place votes because Russell Wilson had never received a vote.
Right. So in the 3 years since they changed the voting, a non-quarterback has not received a single first place vote. Not Tyreek Hill when he had his monster year. Maybe before that, I see Cooper Kupp got 1% the year before. But like, the non-quarterbacks don't get anything.
Is there any chance the NFL players are consciously or subconsciously pushing back on the fact that nobody else gets awards? So, hey, let's shout out some running backs and some receivers at the top.
I think I have to look into what 2021 was. I think it's possible, the way I'm just looking through it real quick, that the last time a non-quarterback got a first-place vote for MVP was in 2017, Todd Gurley. 8 years ago. So those guys are not winning MVP.
No.
I probably won't look at it much this year. I've not really looked at MVP odds much recently, but I can't imagine there's a running back, a receiver, or anything anywhere near the top.
803-0550, our phone number. Jeremy and Joe. Pete Gwelly, Bills and Sabres COO, coming up at the top of the hour. We'll chat about some Sabres news and notes about upgrades to the arena, single game tickets on sale, and of course we are entering into week one of the football season. How the games might go with the stadium across the street. We got lots to get to. PSL sales, how the rivalries uniforms are being received. Plenty to get to. So Pete Gwelly coming up at 8, Howard Simon at 8:30 for his first installment of formally picking the Bills. Coming up at 8:30. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. As we get closer to the NFL season, we've had some jersey number switches. Matthew Golden in Green Bay was wearing 22.
Mm-hmm.
He's now to zero. That's good. And, ooh, somebody's wearing 41, I saw. Like a edge rusher's wearing 41. He wanted a single digit. I'm going to find that one.
Didn't get it?
No. But the one I wanted to get to was Shavers.
Yeah, your guy.
Shavers switches to number 14
mm-hmm.
in a tribute, of course, to Chase Claypool.
Of course.
No? Okay. Sammy Watkins? No?
No.
Diggs.
Fitzpatrick?
Yeah. Diggs. Fitz. You know, it's had a pretty good run. That's not a bad number. Fitz, Diggs.
Yeah.
Watkins didn't work out.
Ray McLeod somewhere in the mix there.
Wow, I did not remember that.
You know
one.
The only reason I know that? I have a buddy who has a number 14 Ray McLeod jersey. So, which there must be a million Bills number 14 jerseys out there in the wild, and that is the only one that is that player.
That person should wear the jersey to a bar and say, I'll bet you a beer you don't know who's on the back of this jersey. I'll give you three guesses.
Yeah.
And it's Ray McLeod. Here's the question I have. Because I know a guy, Mike, who does, he'll switch the nameplates out for you. So I'm tweeting about it. Like, hey, if you want to get your nameplate switched, you got a 14 jersey. Switching a Diggs jersey to Shavers. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
No.
Here's what I'd say. I don't know if there will be a time where Diggs is, like, okay to come back and things are okay again. There are plenty of Bills fans that I don't think hate him. But, you know, there's a breakup.
Yeah.
I have a Diggs jersey. I would never think about changing the name off that. Like, he was awesome. No. I don't know if he'll ever be a legend of the game 7 years from now. Will he? Maybe. Who knows? You know?
Time heals.
Time heals a lot of things.
Hasha came back.
Yeah.
And that was a worse breakup, I think, honestly.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah.
Anyway, if you want to get the nameplate swapped out, you could do it for Shavers.
I guess he switched, though, because that was his college number?
Yes.
Because he wore 14 in college. Although I did see a couple of retweets from last year at the Houston game where Shavers, like big Diggs guy. Like, big brother, like looked like he was almost in tears when he met him in the middle of the field. So, but I don't know if he did it just to honor him, because I think he wore it at Mississippi State.
He wore a couple different uniforms over the years. I've got a couple different ones on
him. Yeah, Alabama, he wore 4, maybe? I'll have to look.
Anyway, Shavers in 14.
It's a better number, I think, if you're thinking about him making an impact.
Than 80?
Yeah.
Arguably the greatest receiver of all time wore number 80, of course, like Jerry Rice.
Arguably.
I say arguably because
he's got like double the receiving yards of second place.
Okay. I'll take Randy Moss.
I'll take the guy who had 100 catches at 43.
They're all slants.
Or 42.
They're all slants.
All slants.
I don't even know if that's true. I've got nothing wrong. I've got no problem with Jerry Rice.
Sorry, it was 1,200 yards at age 40. I exaggerated a little bit. He averaged 13 yards a catch that year. They went to the Super Bowl, didn't they? Wasn't he on that Raiders team that went to the Super Bowl? Pretty sure he is.
And Tim Brown and Jerry Rice and went to the Super Bowl? I don't think he's on that Raiders Super
Randy
Bowl
Moss
team.
Played in a Super Bowl.
With the Raiders? No, with the Patriots.
Nope. Oh, wait, you're right. Okay, so sorry. Terrible trivia question. I was thinking of the game he played for the 49ers.
Oh, yeah.
He played in the Super Bowl for the 49ers, but anyways.
803-0550. Bills and Sabres COO Pete Gwelly when we return. We checked in with him at training camp. I have another check-in here. We've got some Bills and Sabres news to get to. It's September, and the Sabres play hockey this month. So, you know, might start to make plans to go down to KeyBank Center. We'll talk about some of the changes that have been happening there, in addition to, you know, what's going on with the Bills, how the jerseys, the rivalry uniforms have been received, all that good stuff. So we'll welcome in Pete Gwelly on the other side, and then Howard picks the Bills at 8:30 here on WGR.